My name is Jewel Stafford. I am a social worker by training. I now am a community-based research supervisor at the Washington University in St. Louis School of Medicine Division of Public Health Sciences. Public health, we like a lot of names. And essentially today I'm going to try to squeeze in about 4 years of work that myself, our community members, and my director, Dr. Melody Goodman, and our co-author, Dr. Janice Johnson-Dias, have also done in a period of about 4 years. So I have nothing to disclose. I've just given props to my esteemed collaborating authors. And the purpose, really, of this particular session is to talk about how we worked collectively to develop a comprehensive evidence-based public health training, how we also evaluated that training using both quantitative and qualitative methods, and also to describe the 7 best practices that came out of this research training. So all of this started in Long Island, a great, wonderful place filled with both challenges and opportunities. And so the biggest challenge that we found was that Long Island at the time was the 3rd most residentially segregated region in the nation. And these differences created a lot of social and physical environments that affect our health outcomes, and I think we're aware of that. But what made it increasingly difficult for our community members was that there was a lack of evidence. So it was really difficult for them to demonstrate that these inequities existed because the evidence just wasn't there to support it. So at the Center for Public Health and Health Policy Research at Stony Brook University, where I started, my director and I came up with a multifaceted approach to tackle this particular challenge. And so we decided that one of the things that we really needed to do was to identify the needs of the communities, but as they saw it, and to develop and prioritize a comprehensive action plan with long-term sustainable results. So from the anecdotal statements that we were receiving, a lot of community members in marginalized neighborhoods, really had a sense that we came in sort of like a helicopter. So when we had grant funding, we, you know, deployed all of our resources, and then when the funding ended, somehow we packed it up and we left them with nothing. And so they really wanted something more sustainable. And so the other thing that we decided to do was help them utilize research methods to demonstrate that these disparities existed and what were the unique needs of their community, their county, and Long Island as a whole. So this, again, it was an incremental process over a period of 4 years. So we started engaging key stakeholders and key community members and health professionals at these community forums entitled Mini Summits on Minority Health. And it was at these particular summits they gave us 2 clear recommendations. They gave us a lot of information. They told us a lot about ourselves, but they gave us 2 clear recommendations. And those recommendations were to form a coalition, because they wanted something that was theirs, and to really talk to them about formalized training on this community-based participatory research. So one of the things that they found challenging was that we come into a lot of our communities wearing our academic hat with our academic jargon and really not developing this bi-directional communication. And so the coalition gave us an opportunity to do that, to work with them and to prioritize their needs and develop committees based on those particular needs. So we had 5 committees based on those needs. And the other thing that we did with them was we worked to develop a strategic plan. Everything that they stated, we disseminated back to them in conference proceedings, and we also worked with them collectively to get NIH funding, which is how we moved to step number 3, which is our community-based participatory research, also entitled Community Alliance for Research Empowering Social Change. So this was an academic, community-based research partnership between the Center for Public Health and Health Policy Research, which we entitle affectionately CHIPR, and the Literacy Suffolk. So we thought it was appropriate that we should partner with an organization that did something about literacy. So as we want to increase the literacy of our community members, we want to make sure that our work, our presentations, our tools were specifically tailored to our community members in a way that they could understand. And so this collaboration received funding from the NIH Partners in Research, and that was in about 2008 or 9, I believe. So we came up with 5 key goals, and today we're really going to focus on the enhancing the community's knowledge and understanding of research. So it was great that we united them, and after we finished CARES, which you'll see doesn't ever really end, we are in the process of building the infrastructure for CBPR. We'll also touch briefly about those culturally appropriate interventions, but what I really think is exciting about our community academic partnership was the fact that we have this pool of trained community-based researchers that can do it on their own. So I think that's fantastic. So the evaluation goals, as we saw it, was to examine the utility of this training and to assess the efficacy of this training and the culturally appropriate interventions, and to identify those facilitating factors and barriers. So it's not enough to just do it, but let's figure out what made it effective, and let's figure out what challenges existed so we can improve them. So these are our demographics. We had about 19 actual participants. We had 20 altogether, but 19 completed the entire training. You can see we had a diverse group of racial educated individuals. They came with different affiliations, whether it was a community health worker or from a community-based organization, or if they solely just identified as a community member. And these were extremely motivated individuals, and you can see by their age that they really took this seriously. The other interesting and yet unique aspect of this training was we also provided 2 orientations. We held each of the trainings at community-based libraries, which is sometimes an untapped resource, and we made them designated CARES sites, so each of the training sessions were held there. And we actually were able to get a phenomenal multidisciplinary faculty to come out of the university and come into the libraries and provide sessions based on their expertise. So this was the first time that a lot of our community members really got to interact with our faculty. So it was a 15-week training, 3-hour sessions, workshops based on a standard MPH curriculum, 11 training sessions, 4 experiential workshops. They also had to complete an online human subjects research training, and we developed and released a request for proposals, and they had to complete it so they could get seed money to then do either an intervention or a research project of their own. So this was our syllabus. Each week, a faculty member would come in, they would do a presentation, they would provide them with resources, and they had a really big binder with a lot of information. And if they didn't understand anything, believe me, they gave me a call. And here are our evaluation methods. So we did a baseline assessment at the first training. We did a mid-training one at session 6, a follow-up at the completion. And at each session, we did a pretest, post-test, and evaluation. And then at the end of the training, approximately a year after the training, we did qualitative interviews. I heard that. That was intense, huh? So as you can see, our fellows really were able to think about some topics in a different way. And so we can see that they had a lot of increased scores, especially on the baseline and follow-up on the Belmont report, which a lot of us don't really think about unless we have to do our own online training, and health literacy, thank you, as well as qualitative and quantitative methods. In our pretest and post-test, our fellows did best on 9 out of 11 sessions, so they scored higher on their pretest and their post-test out of 9 out of 11 sessions. And then you can see on the mean evaluation scores, everyone pretty much, it was on a Likert scale, and so everyone pretty much thought that the training was good, really intense, But as you can see, our scores range in the high fives. So, qualitative interviews. We did in-depth interviews to elucidate perceptions and get some insight. Each of the interviews were audio recorded, professionally transcribed, and analyzed. And we, as Elizabeth previously stated, we used grounded theory. We had two analysts independently analyze the transcript. We collapsed the codes into categories. Themes emerged from those categories, and this was under the direction of Dr. Goodman. And she had to make me stop because I had an obscene amount of codes. Analysis. So we went to, from our themes, we can see that people effectively define what was really important about our training through the faculty, the project team, the information that they received, and the training format. So even though it was intense, they liked the fact that they were able to meet with faculty, they had a consistent team, the information was always available to them, and that the training format was very consistent. And so we look at our facilitating factors, and it was definitely location. They felt that the environment was conducive to learning, and that there was a collaborative atmosphere, and that they also did some co-learning with their participants. So because of the diverse group, they were able to learn and facilitate some co-learning amongst the CARES fellows. So here are some other themes in terms of lessons learned, recommendations, and CBPR principles. But really, the last quote pretty much sums up a lot about what we really wanted to gain from our participants. And it's that you're there, you know, not just to take advantage of the community, but really to be an effective alliance. So we thought that that was awesome. And they were very, very honest about how they felt. So based on the baseline and follow-up assessments, we realized that our participants' knowledge of public health increased by 26%, and that the mid-training results indicated that participants would recommend this training to others. And we had 13 complete the training. We also gave them a ceremony, a graduation ceremony, at one of the annual Minority Health Summits with their friends and families and colleagues there. And two of our CARES Fellows teams actually did research projects. So we had the Truth Be Told project, which is a qualitative research project where they did focus groups to elicit concerns on obesity. And then we have the Brentwood Community Health Assessment with the Latino Health Initiative of Suffolk County. They actually wrote their own APHA abstract. They're presenting here this year on Tuesday. That's my plug. And they also are a community-based public health caucus travel recipient, and we are also working with them now on a collaborative manuscript. So what were the lessons learned? The lessons learned were that community members definitely felt empowered, that this comprehensive research training may prove beneficial for faculty and stakeholders who have some desire to engage really community members as equal partners. To this end, we developed 7 best practices that really were effective in terms of guiding our CBPR and community-based public health initiative henceforth. And that is that we need to create a common language between community members and academic researchers, and that through this framework utilizing CBPR, community members are empowered to partner with academic researchers. So we were leveraging what they knew from this training and then really allowing them to practice it with researchers in a safe and comfortable environment. We should pick our faculty based on the ability to explain complex topics, and that these trainings should happen in a structured format accessible to non-traditional learners, located in a community setting, and that we need to have opportunities to recognize fellows, if you choose to call them fellows, but really just recognize community members' own knowledge and expertise, that they have something to contribute, and that educating the training faculty is also as necessary as educating the community members, and that community engagement by the faculty is a prerequisite for ensuring that community members trust their academic partners in the future. I'd like to just thank the National Institutes of Health, clearly our CARES Fellows, and the Suffolk County Library Cooperative Services. Thank you. Thank you.